Good morning, everyone. This afternoon, Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas is slated to meet with President Donald Trump in their first official meeting of the administration. The two are expected to discuss the peace process in the background of much speculation about how the president's policy in the region is shaping out. Trump already met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu soon after he took office. Meanwhile, the Palestinian leader is currently in the middle of a growing power struggle within his own party and with Hamas. On the line with us now to provide his thoughts on the issues is Colonel in Reserves Dr. Eran Lehrman, former Deputy Director and Head of Foreign Policy at the National Security Council. Dr. Lehrman, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. You know, I'm no longer in government and I speak for myself only. What I can relate is a sense that there may be an opportunity out there, and for an interesting reason. We tend to underestimate the chilling effect, the absolutely chilling effect, that the events of the so-called, I mean, this is an absurd term, as we all know, Arab Spring, but specifically the manner in which President Mubarak was ditched by the previous American administration for what may have been excellent reasons, but at the time and since, this has left a very deep mark on the level of courage of Arab leaders generally and of the Palestinian leadership specifically in taking risks in the pursuit of what could be a workable compromise between Israel and the Palestinians. And the fact that we are now seeing something resembling a return to the strategic consensus concept, which the Reagan administration tried and failed, but this administration, of course, is operating under very different conditions. The strategic consensus that weaves together the interests of Israel, Jordan, Egypt, the key Gulf states, Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, what I call generally the forces of stability in the region, in our part of the world. I think that creates also an opportunity to move forward in a complex operation that will include some bilateral work and some involvement by neighboring Arab countries. And the underlying assumption is that while there are issues, and I think that's a fair statement, there are issues that cannot be resolved at this stage, there may be just about enough common interest between all players here, including both Israel and the present Palestinian leadership, to generate some areas of agreement and some implementable elements. And so it's not always easy to determine what makes for the optimism that President Trump is displaying when it comes to the prospect of progress, but it is not entirely baseless. It is not entirely flight of fantasy. Abbas has reacted in a very measured way. I think if he lets go in the meeting today of the lets go of the Palestinian habit to try and impose preconditions for negotiations, then by the time President Trump arrives in Israel within 3 weeks, there may be some elements, some building blocks for the resumption of negotiations. And that's as much as we can say at this point. The Palestinians will have to make a difficult decision, made even more difficult, as you've heard already, by internal strife. But if they let go of what hampered the entire effort in 2009 and again during the Kerry initiative in 2013 and early 2014, this whole business of preconditions, if they understand that under the circumstances this is irrelevant and in a sense it is contrary to the temperament of this American administration, then we may be in business. That's by way of an opening statement, and I think I'm open to questions.
Great. Is President Trump likely to make any kind of offer on the American end to the Palestinians? And if so, can we estimate what might that be?
Well, I believe that President Trump has made it very clear that he does not intend to follow the footsteps of those like President Clinton and others who set parameters from the American side. I think he's closer in sentiment to something that people tend to forget, that Jim Baker said early in the effort to establish what became the Madrid peace conference and the following negotiations. He said, we cannot want peace more than the sides themselves. We cannot, and it is not the business of the United States to actually determine the parameters. Of course, President Trump went as far as to say that he's indifferent to the question whether or not the sides agree on a two-state solution or some other solution, which sounded as if he is abandoning the two-state solution. That's not actually what he said. But I don't think he's in the business of imposing parameters. He was very adamantly opposed to UN Security Council Resolution 2334 that came close to laying down parameters. It was a mistake. He believed it was a mistake. I think he still does. So I'm not, don't think he's going to offer the Palestinians more than the best offices of the United States in creating the conditions for successful negotiations, if they are willing to compromise, and on the assumption that Israel ultimately, if there's a good offer, the will be found to accept a workable compromise.
Understood. What would be considered a positive result from this meeting for Israel in particular?
Well, if there's an opening to a meeting, I think it's a bit early to speak about more structured mechanism of negotiations that will have to emerge as we go along, because it's a two-layer game. There's a bilateral and a regional dimension. But a meeting, if we are going to look at an event that will include a meeting between the principal leaders with possibly the presence of several regional leaders as well, under the auspices of the American administration, one way or the other, I think that's a positive.
Okay, now moving on, how do you think Abbas's position on the Palestinian street and within his own government is influencing his stance vis-a-vis the Americans?
Well, I think the Palestinian public presents a paradox. My friend Dan Polissa, who is my provost at Shalem College in Jerusalem, recently published his observations on the Palestinian popular position on peace and the components of peace, and it's rather sadly negative and uncompromising. At the same time, I would also say that the majority of Palestinians also have learned to read the international and regional situation intelligently enough to understand that what the fantasies they harbor about Israel no longer being there are irrelevant to the realities they're going to face. And therefore, if their leadership comes up with something workable that makes a difference in their daily life, that makes a difference in the level of daily tensions that they face, makes a difference in their material life, I think they will live with it and ultimately will come to accept it. But the Palestinian leadership must play an important educational role. This is why Israel has made the point of talking about mutual recognition between the two national movements. It's important that the Palestinian leadership, through an act of language here, will recognize, at least in the context of the agreement when it is reached, that this has been a struggle between two legitimate national movements and not between victims, Palestinian victims, and Israeli perpetrators, which is how they like to portray it nowadays. And that will make a difference. That will also be an enabler for an Israeli leadership to make the terrible decisions, the terrible sacrifices that a deal and agreement will entail.
And what about his position specifically? We're hearing more and more about his own stance weakening in light of all these other players coming out. We have.
He's not a young man, and there is, I think, quite a lot of positioning going on towards the prospect of succession down the road. But for the time being, I have not seen anything to indicate that either Barghouti or Dahlan have what it takes to really challenge him. And it's clear that this whole business of the prisoner strike is part of this attempt by Barghouti to remind the world that he's still around and he has a claim on the leadership. It's a very doubtful claim, and I have a sneaking suspicion that the Israeli establishment and the Israeli public are not that keen to see a convicted terrorist take the helm. And I think there's enough potential within the Palestinian administration as it is without having to go for these two discredited individuals. So Abbas, I think, has what it takes to go ahead if he is personally reassured that, let's say, the current American administration will not abandon him when he is challenged, as has happened to some of his neighbors early in the previous administration.
Okay, and just while we have you on the line, I'm sure you have an opinion about this as well. I'd like to ask you about yesterday's UNESCO vote on Jerusalem, which angered many in Israel. What would you make of it?
Well, of course, it's an automatic bloc vote, but this time it was only the bloc plus, unfortunately, Russia and China, which still do in international fora the opposite of what they tell us in bilateral business. But it is very encouraging that so we will, these 22 who voted 4 out of 58 do not surprise us. What surprises us in a positive sense is that there's been a major shift in the European vote. And I personally, being an advocate of what I call the Mediterranean idea, Israel's place not so much in this old discredited colonial term, the Middle East, but as a Mediterranean country like Egypt and like Turkey and like Greece and like Cyprus and etc. Israel is a Mediterranean country, and it was good to see two of our Mediterranean partners, Italy and Greece, shift their vote to a no. Certainly under the present political circumstances in both countries, this is a remarkable shift, which I think is an indication of a change that will persist.
Very interesting. Well, that's all the time we have today. In the meantime, we'll wait for the meeting itself to see what happens. Go ahead, sorry.
I said indeed, because there is, of course, an element of unpredictability in situations like this.
Absolutely. Dr. Ran Nelman, Colonel in Reserves, former Deputy Director and Head of Foreign Policy at the National Security Council. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today.
You're welcome.
And thank you to everyone who dialed in. Goodbye.